Welcome on in, everybody, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It is Wednesday, March 11th, and I am your host, Gino Camilleri, as always. And Lou joined you guys yesterday on the program going through his off-season simulation. He played the role of Howie Roseman, and now he's passing that over to me. I didn't listen to his because I didn't want to have any spoilers, so I'm going to do mine, and then I'm going to listen to his and see how our minds think. I think we're pretty much on the same page for a lot of things, but we can differ in some elements, so I'm excited to see what he says. So I'm going to do it exactly how he did it yesterday. I'm going to go through first the guys that are currently on the roster, the decisions that Howie has to make. Is he going to stick with his heart? Is he going to think with his wallet this offseason? Segment two, I'm going to get into some guys that not yet, they haven't been paid yet by Philadelphia, but they could soon become Philadelphia Eagles and wear the midnight green. And then in segment three, I'm going to get into a mock draft I did before the show to fill some of these holes that the Eagles could have and to develop some guys that truly need to be impact players next year, but more importantly, they need to be impact players for multiple seasons. The Eagles, they've gotten good production out of guys for one or two years. I mean, you've seen Nelson Agholor have flashes in the pan. They had Nigel Bradham for a very good season there in 2017. They got a lot of good production out of guys in 2017. A lot of one-year guys like Torrey Smith as well. But now they need a culmination of all those elements once again. And frankly, they have the building blocks, and we've been saying this a lot this offseason, that they have a lot of the elements that they need there to build this team, but they just need to fill in some depth pieces. And I truly believe that this is a great offseason with 10 picks, with over $40 million in cap space. Not that that matters, since the cap is going to go astronomical when the next CBA hits and when the next TV rights deal hits. We're going to pull that show up that Lou and I did last year talking that exact topic. But today, we're going to get into it. And currently, what's going on with the salary cap? It's just north of $200 million this season. So the Eagles have some tough decisions to make in-house, first of all. And I'm going to start with the biggest elephant in the room. I think we all know where this is going. And arguably, the one guy that I'd hate to say that history might repeat itself to see the second best safety this club has ever seen. I think that many people would agree with that sentiment. To see him leave on a tough note this offseason, I think it's going to happen, unfortunately, much like Brian Dawkins did all those years ago. I just don't think that how Jenkins has been deployed these last couple of years, that he is worth $15 million, which is the going rate for these top safeties. If you look at what Eric Weddle and Earl Thomas and Tyrann Mathieu have gotten paid, frankly, they just can't afford to do that if they want to improve at the corner position, which they have wanted to for many off seasons, and especially this one when there is one big high-profile free agent that we're going to talk about that they firmly want to pay for and are going to be the front runners. I just don't believe that you can re-sign Malcolm for $15 million and expect to go heavy at cornerback in this free agency period. Howie has said it multiple times this offseason now that they have to get younger and they can't make decisions purely on their heart, and they have to make those tough business decisions, which you have seen clubs make. Go back to Seattle with the Legion of Boom. They broke up after many years because, frankly, you couldn't pay everybody. But to me, Malcolm Jenkins, how he has been deployed recently, has been within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, defending those short to intermediate routes on tight ends. He's a guy that plays in the box. I just believe they're those guys are, I don't want to say this and disrespect Malcolm, but they're almost a dime a dozen in this modern NFL. I mean, yes, he's the defensive captain. He's the heartbeat of that defense. But just how he is deployed, and if you want to just get into the analytic portion of it, I just can't believe that you could go out and pay him $15 million and expect to have a guy on an island and pay him any less than market rate, which is near $20 million at the cornerback position. But there are many ways to supplement that, and trust me, I would be the first to give Malcolm all his praise that he's one of the best to ever do it in Midnight Green, and number 27 should be retired by all intents and purposes. But to me, Rodney McLeod, and Lou said this the other day on the show, and I agreed with him, was arguably the heartbeat to that defense in 2017 as well, because you saw what happened when he went down in 2018, and frankly, they couldn't find a replacement fast enough for him. I mean, they were throwing Corey Graham back there, they threw Avante Maddox back there. Just frankly, to me, Rodney McLeod presents more value at his age and his skill set than Malcolm Jenkins does at 32 in his skill set. Because Rodney, I still see him being able to deploy at single high, let him go play on an island, which Schwartz loves to do with his safeties, playing that style of defense, which we all hate, but he does it. So you got to have a guy that has that range, and Rodney still has it to me. Sticking in that secondary, Ronald Darby, Jalen Mills, see you later. Thank you for your contributions. I think you got what you're going to get out of both of them. You've seen their ceiling. Now is time to move on. You're going to get good comp picks for them. I could see somebody paying Jalen anywhere from 6 to 8 and Darby maybe 9 to 11 million. So you have some good comp picks coming your way with this class of free agents that I'll just go on down the list of guys who I don't think are going to be back. Jason Peters, frankly, I don't think they're going to bring him back at the price that he wants to be paid. Nate Sudfeld, same thing. I believe that some team with a young quarterback, maybe the Cleveland Browns or maybe the Buffalo Bills, take a shot on a guy like him who has sat behind somebody like Carson Wentz and Nick Foles and could be a strong support system to a young quarterback. Nelson Agholor, we all know that how my feeling is about him, but frankly, the team, I believe, doesn't think that he will be back as well because they're not going to pay him anywhere near $9.4 million, which they did last year. Craig James, who is a exclusive rights free agent, I still don't think he will be back. I don't think McCown will be back at his age. I think his better days are behind him. Ending the season the way he did on that injury, that's tough. It's going to be a while for him to recover from that, but thank you for all his contributions. I mean, I would love to see him back in Midnight Green as a coach, but just not as a player, frankly. Tim Jernigan, unfortunately, I do not. I just think he has too big of a market out there for his style of play, that fastball style of play. Payne Jackson, Payne Cox, I just don't think you could pay a third guy that big money. Continuing on, Richard Rodgers, I don't want to see him back, frankly, and I don't think they should pay him. Big V, we already know he's going to have a hefty market out there for being a swing tackle, being a versatile player that he is. Should be another good comp pick there. Camus, one that's upsetting to me because I frankly think he has a place on this team. I like his style of play. Plays well in space, comes up big, can defend that line of scrimmage there on the strong or weak side. Really a guy that deploys well in the system, but that type of player demands a suitable contract, and I don't think Philly is going to be willing to pay him. I've heard that they want to go cheap there. I just don't think they're going to go anywhere near that amount of money. So I've said a lot of guys who I don't think are going to be back. One guy who I want to be back and I think will be back, actually two here on the defensive line, Vinny Curry and Hassan Ridgeway. Vinny Curry, I just think his versatility on this defense is, it's too vital. Because right now you don't know the future of Derek Barnett. Really, Derek Barnett only deploys while on the edge for you right now. Vinny Curry has kicked inside, played his best at three tech most of the season last year. A guy who plays his best ball in Philadelphia, he's gone on to, quote, greener pastures in Tampa Bay, and he came back the next season because he liked the way he was deployed in Schwartz's scheme, and I like how Schwartz deploys him because he can get up the field. He has improved drastically in his run-stopping ability. He's only going to continue to improve on his mental processing of the game. A guy who I would like to continue to be there next to Josh Sweat, next to Sharif Miller, show those young guys the rope if they can bring him back on maybe a two-year, $15 million deal. I'd be fine paying him that. I think that versatility garners somewhere around that in free agency, if not more. So if he doesn't have a big market, I would absolutely love to see Vinny Curry back. And Hassan Ridgeway, I just don't think they're going to let him see free agency because they gave up an asset for him last offseason to get him onto the team in that fourth round pick they gave to the Colts. So I want him back. He could easily be that next man up next to Cox if Malik Jackson has gone down. He did it well last year. And I frankly think that he has developed the best out of those young guys that they have had there. And if they don't get one early on in this class that they think could be the future, I'm fine with seeing Ridgeway there on that rookie contract that he has until it expires. And maybe get an extension done before that fourth year to keep him in-house. But he's a player that I thought played well. But in total, going out the door, I have 11 free agents leaving this offseason. And then another one who I didn't say, because he technically isn't a free agent, he's a restricted free agent, is Corey Clement. I do not think the Eagles will tender Corey Clement solely for the fact that I think they have their replacement in Boston Scott. I think they'll address running back in the draft. Deuce Staley saw these guys firsthand at the combine. He was doing the drills with them. I could see him falling in love with a guy, and Corey Clement fell out of favor. No thanks to himself or the injuries, but I just think his time is better served on another team. I think he's a change of scenery guy for sure coming up into this offseason, which is unfortunate, but this team can expect to get a lot of guys back because I frankly don't think they're going to go on a huge spending spree outside of maybe one or two guys, and we'll get into that on segment two of the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome on back to segment two of this Wednesday, March 11th edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. I'm your host, Gino Camilleri. As always, segment one, we went through the guys in-house. We see a lot of guys leaving. I counted 12 in total. That is quite the amount of turnover year over year. But if you're losing guys, you got to bring some guys in. And we're going to start, like we did in the first segment, with the big fish, with the biggest question mark, with the player who I think makes the most impact bringing him into this team, being Byron Jones. Adam Kaplan, great insider for the Philadelphia Eagles. I had the luxury of meeting him down in Alabama. Great guy. Great to talk with him. He reported that the Eagles would be at the front of the market for Byron Jones, and you're seeing more and more reports that he's going to be arguably the highest paid corner in the sport. Eagles fans have a lot of, I'd say, hate. I would take it to the level of hate of paying cornerbacks big money because of these two guys named Nnamdi Asamoah and Byron Maxwell, who were so bad in their time here that they have completely soured the idea of even going near a good cornerback just because of the amount of numbers on his paycheck. But frankly, the one thing that Byron Jones has over those two individuals is his versatility. Byron Jones isn't a cover three safety like Byron Maxwell was in the Legion of Boom. He wasn't a purely zone corner like Nnamdi was or like Josh Norman was at his time in Carolina. Just think of some of these cornerbacks that can only play in zone. Byron Jones is a lockdown guy who covers the best of the best. He covers Zach Ertz. He covers DeAndre Hopkins. He covers all different sorts of players that are elite to very good to good. And he does it in a very good manner. And let's look at a team who has gone out and spent big money on a lockdown corner and which has changed their entire outlook on defense. The New England Patriots. I was wrong about Stephon Gilmore. I will admit when I'm wrong. I didn't think he was as good as people said he was. I thought he was what Ronald Darby truly is, but frankly, I was wrong in that regard. And he is a true lockdown corner, and Bill Belichick saw that. And he paid him what it is worth to completely shut down a side of the defense. The thing is, when you could take away an entire half of the field, and you have deficiencies at the other half of the field, you could cover them up. When you have the freedom of deploying two safeties, two cornerbacks, three linebackers in coverage on one side of the field, because you have Byron Jones on the other side who can completely shut down their best receiver, man, oh man, that makes Jim Schwartz's life a lot easier. And trust me, you may be scared at the price tag, you may be scared at paying big-time free agents, but frankly, you have to do something. You've paid Band-Aid-type players like Ronald Darby. It hasn't worked out. You've drafted late and gotten guys that just don't have the complete package, like Jalen Mills. You have traded for guys to get Ronald Darby. Now you have to do something that you have done before, but frankly, you have to do it in a manner that fits your scheme, and Byron Jones fits your scheme. Not only that, but he takes away from having an elite player on your biggest rival's defense, and now you're going to put him on your defense. That is a huge double check mark, double positive, two thumbs up, whatever you want to call it in my book. Ben Solak, former host of this podcast, put out a fantastic piece today talking about Byron Jones. Not just talking about him, but backing it up with film, backing it up with breakdowns. Please go read it, because it goes into the depths of what this player can do for your team. And man, Jim Schwartz, we give him all sorts of crap. He has had just the short end of the stick at cornerback, having just a bad defensive backs coach the last couple years with Unlin and what he has done with them, having guys just go down to injury in Sidney Jones and every other corner that has been there. I don't think he has been given a player like Byron Jones since the days that he had Courtland Finnegan, where he let his best corner travel on an island. So I don't want to hear these concerns that he won't let his corner travel, because he has not had a player like Byron Jones to the skill level of Byron Jones, and having the freedom to go and put him out there on one side of the field and never have to worry about him. There's a reason he doesn't have many interceptions. It's because teams don't target him. It's because he's right on them. He's 6'1", has arms for days, has athleticism for days. That's what the modern day NFL is. It's about matchups. You need to have guys that can cover George Kittle. You need to have guys that can cover Travis Kelce, but at the same time can go out there and cover the speed of Terry McLaurin and cover the route running ability of Amari Cooper and Odell Beckham Jr. That player is Byron Jones, and you haven't had that type of player in nearly a decade. Go out, pay him whatever it is worth to get him here, because the salary cap does not matter. In 2 years, his contract will be an absolute bargain when the cap is up to $250 million. So pay him now before this market goes out of control within the next couple years. I digress from Byron Jones. I think we know that I want him in Philadelphia. Some other guys that aren't as high profile as him, which I don't think they need a ton of high profile guys in free agency, rather in the draft they should. I'm going to go out and look for guys that are veteran-type players coming off of those first contracts, like I've mentioned before. Or guys like Trey Boston, who is a veteran, who's been around the league, played in many different systems, and could be a low free agent signing, not going to cost you much against the cap, and go out there and be your safety two, be your safety three if you happen to draft one early on, and be a guy that could be a replacement to Rodney McLeod if he went down to injury. Not to his extent, but he could be a guy that fills that type of role. I've been a big proponent of Trey Boston the last couple years. I don't think he cost you anywhere near, I'd say, $5 to $6 million, maybe even less than that. I just think he is a player you can bring in this deep safety market right now, especially with a good safety class coming up, on the cheap to come in here and be your rotational safety that could play big minutes in that Corey Graham, Andrew Sendejo role. To the offensive side of the ball, I'm looking at players like Taylor Gabriel. I've mentioned his name before. I think you can put him in the slot for a couple years until you maybe draft a slot corner that can develop there. Or, hey, if he gets in there and he's your gadget type guy that can just run all sorts of first down creating routes in 8 to 9 yard areas, I wouldn't mind extending him past that 1 year, but I would bring him in because he has speed. He has that elusiveness that this team has needed in the slot. Guy that has done it with good quarterbacks outside of Mitch Trubisky. He did it with Matt Ryan. So if you get him a guy like Carson Wentz, I fully expect him to be back to his form. He hasn't lost a step if you go back and look at his tape. He is pretty good in his own right unfortunately had to play with Mitch Trubisky. It is quite unfortunate that many receivers have to play under him. Swing tackle, I think, is another big role. Another guy I like was LeAdrian Waddle. He signed with Buffalo in the offseason. He's a guy that can play either side of the ball. Has had that injury concern, but I don't think he would cost too much. I just think you need a guy right now that if you do draft another swing tackle, another big V in the making, you need a guy like him to play that veteran role for the time being. At tight end, I think you need a TE3 with Richard Rodgers leaving. Logan Thomas, I like him as an option. He's only 29 years old. He was a converted quarterback. He was at Buffalo, was recently at Detroit. Has the ability to make some catches in the flat. He could be a guy you can motion to the backfield. He can block. He's got that makeup of Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz, long arms, athletic profile. A guy you could get cheap just to be that tight end three. Don't think it's a huge concern, but I would bring in a veteran presence there for sure, just in case he needed to play one or two games, because Zach Ertz, we know, has had some trouble playing full 16-game season, but he's still an Iron Man in his own right. At the quarterback position, I'd look to bring in a veteran like Trevor Siemian. I think he's good enough to win games with, maybe one or two a season if you need him to do that. Don't think you're going to go out and pay a guy a lot of money, but he's a guy. You pay him $7, $8 million a year. I think he's a good backup. They like to pay fair price money for backup quarterbacks, but I can't see them breaking the bank for a guy like Case Keenum. But if you can get a guy like Siemian, who's had starter minutes, played in some systems that transfer well over to the Philadelphia Eagles system, I believe he's a guy I would want behind Carson Wentz and to groom a rookie. On the defensive side of the ball, just two more guys wrapping it up. Nick Vigil, just a linebacker you could bring in from Cincinnati to compete, be a guy that could be in camp, and if you want to have him compete with Nate Geary, so be it. I don't even want to think about that linebacker group right now. It is a disaster. They need to make some moves in the worst ways. But one kind of risky signing I would take, even though this team wants to get younger, I'd give Gerald McCoy a call. I think if you want to run a heavy rotation and you don't know if you can get a good defensive tackle in the draft early on, like you want to look at other positions, having him there for your DT3 or DT3A and B with him and Ridgeway, he's a good run stuffer. He's still got juice in his legs. He was a Pro Bowler, All Pro. He's a guy that I think next to Fletcher Cox, they could wreak havoc on the interior. And he was with Carolina last year. And if he wants to compete for a Super Bowl, come to Philadelphia. Jim Schwartz would love to have a player like that in his scheme. And I wouldn't mind giving his agent a call early on in free agency just to see what the market is on him. But I'm not going to get pent up too much in free agency outside of Byron Jones, but the draft is really where I need this to see this team succeed, and I believe that Howie Roseman can make some selections on this list from the 10 picks that I made that would really have a great impact moving forward for this Philadelphia Eagles team. So join me on segment 3 of the Locked On Eagles podcast here on Wednesday, March 11th, so come on back. All right, everybody, wrapping it up here on this Wednesday, March 11th edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. It's Gino Camilleri joining you. We talked free agents in-house and guys that we want to bring in the building. Free agency is only a couple days away. I forget how close we actually are to the legal tampering period, which is the official start of free agency, as much as people want to say that there is an official date on it. It has already started in my book. But the one event that does not start until late April is the NFL draft. I believe with 10 picks that this Philadelphia Eagles team can walk away with 2 to 3 starters year one and 6 to 7 year two starters without a doubt, especially looking at this list of players that I drafted here. Just in my opinion, just from my evaluation, you may have your own, and that's okay. And that's part of the evaluation process. And I know Howie and his scouting staff is going through the same exact thing. But in my book, this class has the chance to be historic in many different facets, and especially for this Eagles team, which so badly needs double-digit draft picks for the first time in a few years, coming off of years of 5-5 to near double the amount that you're making in 1 year, that is absolutely huge. So we're starting it off. We're going round one. Jerry Jeudy somehow fell to me at 21, and if that's the case, Howie Roseman makes that pick. If the If he gets to anywhere near Dallas Cowboys, I think you're hearing a call from Howie Roseman because you don't want to see him go to your rival. And frankly, he's a game changer. Don't know why he would fall. He has the production at Alabama, has the national championships under his belt. Seeing him run routes for Carson Wentz, create that easy separation. You have a starter. Day one, he walks in the building. Opposite of DeSean Jackson, you have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside there still. I like that unit moving forward with what you have there. Pick number 2 in the second round there. 53, we're going A.J. Terrell, the cornerback out of Clemson. If you look at his numbers, not the best, but if you look at his film, he has gone up against some dogs, some good time wide receivers, and he has excelled. He's lengthy. He's athletic. He's a guy that you can put opposite of a guy like Byron Jones, or even let him compete with Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas at first. But he is a guy that I could see being your number two guy for many years next to Byron Jones because he fits that profile of what you need moving forward. And that's the number two guy of the two out of the three starters I could see right away moving into this team. Pick number 3, the third starter that I would say, Troy Dye. One of my favorite players, Oregon Duck. His compete level is through the roof. He battled all year with a cast on his hand, a torn meniscus. Guy who covers well, an absolute dog, will take on everybody in the open field, a reliable tackler. He is a guy that's going to start day one for me. Could soon be your field general to call the plays, if not year one. He was a defensive captain at Oregon. He's a guy that I want on my football team moving forward, especially for a team that struggled tackling. Troy Dye has the modern-day makeup for a modern-day linebacker. If you're going early, if you're going day two, I'm going Troy Dye. We're moving to... we're not moving to day three yet. Forgot about the comp pick. But the comp pick at pick 103, I went with Kevon Wallace, second player out of Clemson. The reason I like Clemson players, versatility. We talked about this, Lou and I, the other day. These guys are able to move around, especially the safeties. They played all over. Wallace could be deployed in those nickel packages year one, be a sub-package player year one. Year two and three, you would expect to see him back in single high in some situations. Be that number two guy to Rodney McLeod moving forward, and maybe even the number one guy moving forward if you don't double up or sign one in this offseason. Moving on. Pick number 127, the first pick in the fourth round, the edge out of Syracuse, Alton Robinson, a guy who I had athleticism questions on until he went to the combine, but a guy that fits the profile of what the Eagles like at edge. Motor for days, will just continue to move his legs nonstop. A battler up and down the line of scrimmage, a guy that you can deploy inside at three tech in some situations. Someone that I want on my football team. I like guys that have good compete levels, much like the Eagles do in their defensive line players like Brandon Graham. Alton Robinson is one of those guys. He was a dog at Syracuse, took on a lot of double teams now that he was known last year, and Kendall Coleman tend to not get as much recognition. Another good ball player, but Alton Robinson at 127 is complete value to me. Staying on the defensive line at pick 145, love that we have another pick at 146. It's great. Opens up the opportunity for trade backs if you have a cluster of guys you like there. At 145, I went one of the Davis brothers from Nebraska. I went Khalil Davis. Unbelievable athleticism. He tested well at the combine, had a relative athletic score above 9. A guy that is a fastball. His explosiveness is exactly what you want to see in Schwartz's system. Maybe stash him on the practice squad year one if you bring in a veteran guy, or even have him be your interior defensive lineman 4 in a rotation. Even 5 if you want to keep 5 there, which they have been knowing to do in past seasons. Next pick at 146, I went wide receiver. Only went 2 in this class because I think you get 2 very good guys and 2 future starters. One right away, and the second one in Michael Pittman Jr., I believe, can be a starter down the road. Has that big body profile like JJ does, but he's a much better route runner than JJ is, in my opinion. He creates separation easier than JJ does. Has some question marks to his game, much like guys in that range will have. But to me, he is a guy that has gone under the radar. Don't know why these Pac-12 receivers just tend to get slept on a lot more. But to me, I'm bringing him in. Big body guy, just create mismatches all throughout this offense. More guys that are above 6 foot and that are speedy and have athleticism, the better, in my opinion. But you don't always have to be 6 feet, especially when you're playing running back, and that's what I went with at pick 166 in LaMichael Perine, a guy with a low center of gravity, a better ball player than his brother, in my opinion. I love, and so does Howie, picking guys out of Florida. Samaje Perine, a guy that could be a running back three in your rotation. Just let him go out there and get those hard-nosed yards. Doesn't stop moving his legs. Good contact balance. A good low center of gravity will get you those couple yards. And has the ability to be a passing game threat too, which Jordan Howard didn't have as much last year. And that's what you want in guys late in the draft, are guys that can present multiple matchups and present different skill sets based on their athleticism. And a guy that can do that, like LaMichael Perine, I'm definitely taking a chance on. The next pick, 168, I went Lamar Jackson. Not the quarterback, the cornerback out of Nebraska. Another big-bodied guy that can tackle well. He's going to be a guy on the edge that shorts if you need a guy to make a tackle for you. He can. Isn't going to be the fastest guy, isn't the most athletic, but a long-rangey corner, which is the modern-day corner, is what you see in Byron Jones, is what you see in A.J. Terrell. I would take a chance on a guy like Lamar Jackson, possibly be a practice squad guy for the first year. Then the last guy, who I'm going to end with because he's a great versatile player, another Oregon Duck, Kelvin Throckmorton, played four positions on the offensive line for the Ducks in his tenure there, would be a guy that could be potentially your swing tackle moving forward. If you bring in a veteran, he could be that guy that doesn't dress. I mean, what do you want to do with the flying New Zealander and Jordan Mailata? It'll be interesting to see, but Throckmorton is a guy that has that versatility to where you want to put him on the line. It can go anywhere, and especially if you have a coach that can coach him up like Jeff Stoutland, he would definitely be a guy I would bring in to develop. So that's what I would do in the offseason. We'll see if I hit on any of these things. Hopefully I hit on maybe 30 to 35% I'd be happy with. And I will go and see what Lou said as well, and we'll probably have a little competition, put a beverage or two on it. But that's going to do it for me today on this off-season options. We're talking off-season simulations today here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you guys always for listening here to me, coming to your airways. We're coming multiple times a week on Apple, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you guys listen to your podcast. Thank you for listening. As always, I'm your host, Gino Camilleri. You can catch me on Twitter at Gino_LOE. Catch my co-host, Lou DiBiase, at DiBiase_LOE. Catch our mothership pod at Lockdown Birds. Catch us on Lockdown Podcast Network at LockdownEagles.com. Always catch us on Twitter. We're talking shop. Rate, review, subscribe. We love you guys. Thank you guys always for listening. Go Birds. Fly, Eagles, fly. Can't wait to talk to you guys next time. Fly, Eagles, fly.